We're going to be this morning in the Adriatic Sea, going back and forth and up and down and right and left and not having any idea where we are. And I hope you brought your Dramamine today so that we don't all get seasick. We are in Acts 27. We're looking at starting at verse 22. We remind ourselves that God had Paul and all of the other 275 persons on board this ship right where he wanted them. Just like he has you and me in whatever we're experiencing, right where he wants us. Yes, sometimes we want to get out of where he wants us, don't we? But don't get too excited about that. Stay where he wants you and let him teach you what you need to learn. These people were attempting to sail from Fair Heavens to Phoenix. Now, these are not too far apart, and they're both on the south side of the island of Crete, where they were expecting to winter in Phoenix. However, it wasn't long after they left Fair Havens that they were caught by a hurricane force wind and were being blown around the Adriatic Sea. Sometimes I may have said the Mediterranean, but there's hardly any difference between the two when you get out in the middle because they join each other. But the Adriatic Sea is the sea between Greece and Italy. It extended south of Italy and of Sicily to Malta, which is where they're going to end up. Things had become so dire that all hope that they would survive this storm had vanished. Have you ever been in the middle of a trial, wondering, how will I ever get through this thing? I'm sure we all have at times. But remember, God's in control. You and I aren't, though we think we are. After being blown around by a hurricane in the Adriatic Sea, Paul advised those on board the ship that the ship would be lost, but that there would be no loss of life. Well, that's not what they really wanted to hear. On the other hand, it was what they wanted to hear. And now he says in verse 22, I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. And is continuing Paul's statement to those on the ship, now suggests, as far as the present situation is concerned, I exhort you to be of good cheer. Some of them might have been too sick from the seasickness to be very cheerful, but he told them that. I is Paul. You refers to those on board the ship with him as I am urging you to be cheerful. I am urging you to be keeping up your courage. And four introduces the reason Paul urges those on board the ship to be keeping up their courage. It is because there shall be no loss of any man's life among you. No loss of life will be among you, which means that everybody on board the ship is going to survive. But of the ship is except of the ship, and means that the ship will be lost. God's angel had appeared to Paul. For there stood by me this night the angel of God whom I serve, and whom I serve. And four is introducing Paul's reason for stating that there will be no loss of life, but only of the ship. There stood by me this night the angel of God is an angel, or a messenger of God came to me or approached me this night. Whose, which refers to God, I am, means that Paul belongs to God. And whom, which also refers to God, I serve, is whom I am also serving or worshiping. And he is serving or worshiping God by carrying out his religious duties of proclaiming the gospel. You and I are likewise serving the Lord in whatever capacity he has placed us. Let's continue to be faithful in that calling that he's given to us. The angel told Paul that all those with him would be saved, saying, "Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee." Saying introduces what the angel said to Paul. It's used in conjunction with stood in verse 24, indicating a fact in addition to stood. And it's understood in the sense of, and he was saying, and what the angel said comprises the rest of this verse. Fear not, Paul, is actually stop being afraid, Paul. The tense of fear, of being afraid, implies that Paul was afraid and needed to stop being afraid. You know, sometimes we get into situations and we know the Lord's in control, but maybe we get a little bit too concerned about what's going to happen. You ever done that? No. Maybe I have, but I'm sure you have never done that. People in other churches might do that. Thou must be brought before Caesar is a reminder of what Jesus told Paul in Acts 23:11, that just as he had testified about Jesus in Jerusalem, he would also testify about him at Rome. Paul was on his way to Rome for trial before Caesar. Paul will be testifying before people in Rome, including Caesar. So he has to survive this storm and shipwreck that he was experiencing. Suppose Paul had a little lapse here of fear. Of course he did. It says stop fearing, implying you're fearing and you need to stop it. He needed to remember that God was going to take him to Rome. Now, that didn't guarantee the other 275 people on that boat. But Paul needed to remember this, and God will remind you of things from time to time also. You get to thinking and worrying and wondering, oh, what's going to happen? And you remember, God's in control. Stop being afraid of what might come to pass, because it might not come to pass either. Furthermore, all those with Paul will also survive this storm and shipwreck, as, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee, indicates. And lo is used to gain Paul's attention. You mean God had to get Paul's attention? Well, yes, he might have to get ours, but Paul's? Paul was a human being, remember. Yes, he was a godly man and a wonderful servant of the Lord. But from time to time, God got his attention, just like he gets your attention or my attention. It means, and behold, God hath given thee, is God has graciously given you, Paul. All them that sail with thee is all the ones who are sailing with you, Paul. Who knows how God would use this experience in the lives of all those on board the ship, not only to save their lives, but also to save them from sin and its consequences. We don't have any idea how many of those on board that ship might have been saved as a result of Paul's testifying to them once they got onto this island. Who knows how God would save many on the island of Melita or Malta, where they would be shipwrecked and spend the next 3 months. And we have no way of knowing except whatever the scripture says. Paul believed God, who sent the message through his angel, and so should everyone on board the ship believe God. Wherefore, Paul said, "Sirs, be of good comfort, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me." Wherefore is introducing a strong inference drawn from what the angel has said to Paul. It's understood in the sense of therefore, or for this reason. Paul addresses those on board the ship as sirs, or men. Be of good cheer. Is cheer up, or keep up your courage. They had been in the storm of their lives and were expecting to die. But this would not be happening on this occasion. Something we are not told. We know that they were on that ship going around the Adriatic Sea for 14 nights. Was this on day 7? Day 6? Day 10? We have no way of knowing. It was at least several days into the experience. But these men that were on board that ship with Paul might have had to wait a while and go through a little more turmoil before they would get delivered. We don't really know how long they would have to experience this trial. What's the longest trial you've ever been in? Well, some of us have been through some fairly lengthy trials, not having any really real idea as to how it was going to turn out. But eventually, God brought us through it, taught us some things we needed to learn, and maybe you're going through one of these right now. Wouldn't be shocking to find out that several of you are actually in the middle of a big trial, though you haven't really discussed it with other people. It's a normal procedure that God uses. Every time your baby gets sick, you're going through a trial, aren't you? You're hoping that baby survives this thing. You're hoping you'll survive it too, because you're up all night for several nights in a row. We know. God knows what he's doing. Be of good cheer. For Paul says, I believe God. I'm trusting God. And they can also trust what he has said through his angels, that it shall be even as it was told me. Is that so? It will be in the same way it has been spoken to me. God's angel had delivered the message, and it will turn out to be true. Paul also advised them that they will run aground on some island. Howbeit, verse 26, we must be cast upon a certain island. Howbeit transitions from the good news that those on the ship will survive the shipwreck to what will happen. It's understood in the sense of but, and, or now. We must be cast upon a certain island. Where we refers to those people on the ship is literally that we run aground on some island is necessary. And it means we must run aground on some island. Of course, they don't know which island at this time, and they don't know where it is other than that it's in the Adriatic Sea. The shipwreck on Melita or Malta is seen in verses 27 through 44. On the 14th night of the storm, how many nights was this after the angel spoke to Paul? We do not know. And conjecture is not going to help us. They realized, however, that they were getting close to land. How much time elapsed between the appearance of the angel to Paul and the events of verse 27 is not stated. But when the 14th night was come, can you imagine being out, going through this storm, wondering if you're going to live or die? And I guess they eventually came to the conclusion they were not going to live until the angel spoke. They were driven up and down in Adria. Adria is the Adriatic Sea. About midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, but transitions to the next reported event. When the 14th night was come, when the 14th night came or arrived, as we were driven up and down in Adria, is while we were driven about, while we were being driven about in the Adriatic Sea, again, the sea between Greece and Italy, it extended south of Italy and Sicily to Malta. About midnight, toward the middle of the night, the shipmen, is the sailors, deemed that they drew near to some country. They were suspecting or were supposing that land was coming near or approaching them. We don't know how they did that, but it's likely that they could hear waves crashing on the breakers. If there's another way they could tell, why, we don't know. They were getting closer to land and sounded and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little farther, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. And continues the narrative. Sounded is used in conjunction with found, indicating a fact in addition to found or means. Its tense indicates that its action occurred at the same time as the action of found, and it's been translated as showing a fact in addition to found. But if showing the means by which they found the depth of the water, it's understood in the sense of by sounding. Sounded means that the sailors used a weighted line to determine the depth of the water. And it's understood in the sense of they took soundings. Literally, it is they heaved the lead and found it 20 fathoms. It suggests they discovered or calculated it, meaning the depth of the water, to be 20 fathoms, approximately 120 feet. Now, a fathom was a nautical technical term used to measure the depth of water. Its distance was measured by a person's arms stretched out horizontally. Its length would be somewhere around 6 feet, but would depend on the size of the person and the length of his arms. All right, so let me get your attention up here, and I'll give you a little bit of an illustration as to how this would work, okay? They would have a rope. On the end of the rope, they'd have a piece of lead tied, something that would cause that rope to sink to the bottom of the water. They would hold on to the other end of the rope, okay, and it would be long enough to get down as far as it needed to go. So once they felt it was on the bottom, they would take that rope where it exited the water, where it entered or exited the water, and they would put a hand on that rope, and they would stretch it out like that. That's one fathom. They would take it again and stretch it out. That's two fathoms. They do it a third time and stretch it out until the last time the lead would be in that right hand. All right. This is an approximation. Now, let's just pick on some men here. I won't have them come up here, but a couple of you men are pretty tall. I'm not sure which one of you is the tallest, but whether it's Tim or Kelly or Ron, but my guess is, as I look around, the shortest one of us would be maybe Danny, and I'm right in the middle. So if Kelly or Tim or Ron were to stretch out their arms, would they be longer than mine? Most likely. I haven't measured them. And if Danny were to stretch out his arms, would they be shorter than mine? Yes, most likely. Our arms are somewhat proportioned to the height of our body. But that's how they would determine a fathom, determined about 6 feet, based on the man's, shall I say, wingspread, which is typically about the same as his height. All right, enough of the nautical illustration, okay? Then they took another measure. A short while later, it's understood in the sense of then or but. When they'd gone a little further, it's used in conjunction with a second found indicating time. Its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of found, and it's understood in the sense of after they had gone on or sailed a little farther, they sounded again. It's used in conjunction with the second found, indicating a fact in addition to found and means, or means. Its tense likewise indicates that its action occurred before the action of found, and it has been translated as showing a fact in addition to found. If showing the means by which they found the depth of the water, it's understood in the sense of by sounding. They took another measurement of the depth of the water and found it 15 fathoms. Well, they could multiply 15 by 6, and they'd come up with about 90 feet, which means their measurements were suggesting that they were approaching land. Now, 90 feet of water underneath your boat, or maybe only 85 beneath your boat, you know, it's enough. You're not going to get into trouble with that. But if you get down to where there's not more than 8 or 10 feet, you might be scraping bottom fairly soon. So they cast 4 anchors out of the stern. That's the back end of the boat. And hoped for the day. It was dark. How dark? Dark enough they couldn't see anything, okay? They couldn't see any moon, couldn't see any stars, couldn't see any sun because there was a storm and it was nighttime. Fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they didn't know what was out there, but they realized that rocks would be a problem. They cast 4 anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And then is, and, fearing lest we have should fallen upon rocks, it's used in conjunction with wished, indicating cause. And it's understood in the sense of because they were afraid, lest somehow or lest perhaps we might run aground on rough or on uneven or on rocky places. They cast 4 anchors out of the stern as used in conjunction with wished, indicating a fact in addition to wished, or time. Its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of wished. It's been translated as indicating a fact in addition to wished, but if showing time, it's understood in the sense of after they cast 4 anchors out of the stern, meaning out of the back of the ship. Out of the stern has been placed in a position of emphasis in the Greek text, which is literally, out of the stern they cast out 4 anchors and wished for the day. They were wishing or praying for day to come. It indicates that it was still dark because daylight had not yet come. Thus they could not yet see what lay ahead of them, and wanted to delay their approach to land until they could see where they were headed. In this way, they might be able to avoid being cast onto rocks. I say might, because there was nothing definite about this except it was a bad storm and they really could not control the boat that well. The sailors let down a lifeboat while pretending to be casting anchors out from the front of the ship. Verse 30 says, and as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea under color, as though they would have cast out anchors out of the foreship. How many sailors were there? We don't know. Several, obviously. And transitions to what is reported next, and is understood in the sense of then, but, or now. As the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, sounds like they really didn't care about the passengers. They were going to take care of themselves. Be careful. You'll run into this kind of thing from time to time where people are not looking out for your benefit. They're only looking out for their own. And transitions to what's reported next and is understood in the sense of then, but, or now. As the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, it's used in conjunction with said, verse 31, indicating time or cause. Its tense indicates ongoing action occurring at the same time as the action of said. It's been translated as indicating time. And it's understood in the sense of while the sailors were seeking to flee out of the ship. But it might instead be indicating cause. If so, it would be understood in the sense of because, since, inasmuch as, or in view of the fact that the sailors were seeking to flee out of the ship. When they had let down the boat into the sea, it's used in conjunction with said in verse 31, indicating time. Its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of said, understood in the sense of after they let down the boat, meaning the small boat, the skiff, the ship's boat, or the dinghy into the sea. It's the boat they had managed to pull up onto the ship when they first got in that storm. Ordinarily, it was a lifeboat towed behind the ship, but there's no way 275 people could get in that thing and its float. We're not sure how many it would hold anyway. Under color, as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, is used in conjunction with let down, indicating condition. And its tense indicates ongoing action occurring at the same time as the action of let down. It's understood in the sense of under the pretense or under the pretext, as if they were intending to, or as if they were about to be casting anchors out of the bow, meaning the forward part of the ship. So they're pretending to do something while they're actually doing something else in a deceptive manner. Under color is under the pretense or under the pretext. They were being sneaky in that they were doing one thing while trying to make it appear that they were doing something else. Now, that sneakiness is okay in football, okay, or basketball when you're trying to fake somebody out and, you know, score a touchdown or score a goal or however you would phrase it. But it's not good when it's the sailors that are abandoning the ship and going to abandon all of these other people on board as give them up to die. As though, under color is under pretense or pretext. As though they would means as if they were intending or as if they were about to have cast anchors out of the ship is to be casting anchors out of the bow. Anchors has been placed in a position of emphasis. It reads literally as if intending anchors to be casting out, but they didn't get away with their idea. Paul told the centurion that the sailors had to stay on board the ship in order for the centurion and the soldiers to be saved. Remember now, if you missed last week, you didn't get this. The centurion was in charge of the ship because the grain ship was considered a ship in government service. So the centurion, the captain over 100 soldiers, was the one in charge. He is the one Paul addressed, not the ship's captain. The ship's captain might have been part of that group trying to leave. Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Except these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved." Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, and what he said is, "Except these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved." It is the translation of a conditional statement whose structure in the Greek text indicates that no assumption is made regarding the validity of the condition. The condition is, "Except these abide in the ship." It means if these sailors do not remain on the ship. The conclusion of this conditional statement is, "Ye cannot be saved." You are not able to be saved, meaning delivered or from dying in the storm. Ye is you plural. Remember, if it starts with Y in the King James, ye starts with Y, it's you plural. If it starts with T, thee, thou, thy, thine, it's you singular. To be saved. It's emphatic, and it's referring to the centurion and the soldiers. How far were they out in the water from the island? We don't know. But it gives me the impression that they were out quite a ways yet. We don't know how far out they were. But if they're only 100 feet away, most people would probably be saved. If they were 500 feet away, it might be a little bit more of a problem. The sailors were needed to sail the ship in the best way possible when it was being beached. They had to stay on the ship, or the centurion and the soldiers would not survive the storm. Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. Now, let her fall off hints that it's not yet in the water. When they lowered it, it sounded like it might be in the water. We don't know whether it was actually in the water or just on the way down to the water. Doesn't make any difference. The meaning is the same. The soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat. As the soldiers cut off, cut loose, or just cut the ropes that were holding the boat, this small boat, skiff, ship's boat, or dinghy in place, and let her fall off, is and permitted or allowed it, meaning the boat, to fall off into the sea or to drift away. It's not clear if the boat was already in the water when the ropes were cut. If the boat was not in the water, it suggests that it would be allowed to fall into the water. If the boat had already been lowered into the water, although still secured by the ropes, it suggests that it would be allowed to drift away from the ship. It doesn't make any difference. The result is the same. The boat, little boat, is gone. Nobody's going to get on it. When daylight drew near, Paul advised those on board that they should eat something for their own well-being. And while the day was coming on, you know how it is, you've probably been up that early someday in your life, especially in the winter around here without daylight savings, okay? Daylight savings, I shouldn't say it that way. You know what it's like if you get up too early in the morning, it's still dark out there, okay? Some of you have never been up that early. maybe. If you lived on a farm, you were, especially a dairy farm. And if you lived in my house, you would be. Okay, I'm up every day before it gets light. When daylight came, Paul advised them, eat something for your own good. While the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying that this day is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. I get hungry about every hour. How would I ever survive 14 days without eating? I don't know. Maybe some of you are like me, and maybe some of you can go several days without eating. I can't. I would be faint. And when the day was coming on, until the day was about to come, Paul besought them all to take meat. Paul was urging or encouraging all or everybody to take nourishment or food. Saying introduces what Paul was urging those on board the ship to do. And it's used in conjunction with besought, indicating a fact in addition to besought, or the means by which he was urging them. Its tense indicates ongoing or repeated action occurring at the same time as the action of besought. But if showing a fact in addition, it's understood in the sense of he was saying. If showing the means by which he was urging them, it's understood in the sense of by saying. And what he was saying continues through verse 34. This is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. This day is the 14th day. You're continuing a 14th day without eating, or a 14th day fasting. Wonder why? Because they were probably so sick from seasickness that they couldn't stand the idea of eating anyhow. Ye have tarried is used in conjunction with continued, indicating time. Its tense indicates that its action was ongoing and occurring at the same time. It's understood in the sense of while you are waiting, having taken nothing. They had not eaten anything for 14 days. And Paul advised those on board the ship that they should eat something for their own well-being, and assured them that no harm would come to any of them. Wherefore, I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health, for there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you. Wherefore, introduces this strong inference. We've seen it before. Therefore, for this reason, I pray you to take some meat. I'm encouraging you to partake of food or of nourishment, for this is for your health. Paul's urging them to partake of nourishment is for your deliverance or preservation. Their bodies needed the nourishment food would provide to enable them to get to shore after the shipwreck they were about to experience. For your health is for your deliverance or preservation. Four introduces how their taking food will be for their preservation. There shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you. A hair from the head of no one of you will fall. It means that they will all be divinely protected from any and all harm in the coming shipwreck, even to the point of losing a single hair from their heads. You know, as you continue to mature, you run your comb through your hair. And if you can find it a day when you don't have at least one hair on that comb, you're doing all right, because the more you mature, the more hair seems to come out each time. It's all right. God gave you hair for a purpose. Some of you have long since fulfilled that purpose, and that's okay. Some of us are in the process of fulfilling that purpose. whatever. We know what it means. It means that we're getting more mature than we used to be. And then I look at this little baby that we have in this church. He has no hair. He reminds me of me when I was that age. But I don't remember it. I just remember the pictures. Following his own advice, Paul ate something in front of the others. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. And when he had thus spoken, it's used in conjunction with "and," with "gave thanks," indicating time. And its tense indicates that his action occurred before the action of "gave thanks." It's after he said these things. He took bread, indicating a fact in addition to "gave thanks," or time. Its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of "gave thanks." And it's been translated as indicating a fact in addition to "gave thanks." But of showing time, it's understood in the sense of after he took bread. He gave thanks in the presence of them all. So apparently he's holding on to this food before all of them, in the sight of all of them, of everybody on board the ship. And he probably had their attention at that point in time and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, is used in a conjunction with "began." After he broke it, or in addition he broke it, he began to eat. Means that Paul started eating the bread he had broken. You suppose the people were watching to see if it made him sick? I'm guessing they did. And when they saw that it didn't, they also ate something. He began to eat. Those on board with Paul were encouraged and also ate something. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. Meat, remember, is food, solid food. Were they all of good cheer? It suggests that they were all encouraged or in good spirits. And they also took some meat. They also partook of the food or of the nourishment. In verse 37, Paul indicates that the number of people on board the ship, including himself, was 276. That's a lot of people on a small boat in the middle of a storm. And we were in the ship, 316 souls. That's 276. After eating, they lightened the ship by casting the grain overboard. Now, it's referred to as wheat, but it's actually grain. Doesn't matter whether it's actually what we would call wheat. It was a grain of some sort. Why did they cast the grain out? Well, you see, they lightened the ship in the process. And here's the thing, they knew that they were going to run the ship aground. So by throwing the grain overboard, the ship would not ride as deep in the water. And this would enable them to get closer to shore before running aground, thus increasing their chances of survival. Now, I skipped a little bit in there, and I'm going to start verse 39 right now. So if you can't find where I was, find the 39. When it was day, they determined to try to sail the ship into a bay with a beach. Have you ever determined that the best course of action that you could take in a particular circumstance was something specific? Only to find it didn't work out that way, that God had a different idea. I probably have. We've all been in that situation, I'm sure. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. and transitions to what happened after daybreak in the sense of then or now. When it was day means when day came. Okay, it's light now, we can see. They knew not the land means they were not recognizing the land. Why not? Well, maybe they'd never been there before. They also had no idea where they were because they charted their course by the stars. They couldn't see the sun or the stars for 14 days and could not have charted their course. But introduces a mild contrast with their not recognizing the land. How far out are they? We don't know. But they were close enough that they could observe some features on this island. They noticed a certain creek with a shore. They were noticing or observing carefully a certain bay with a beach. It was part of the sea which indented the shoreline and had a beach, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship is a conditional statement whose structure in the Greek text indicates that for sake of discussion, it's assumed to be true, but it may not turn out to be true. It's assumed to be true. The condition is if it were possible, and it's mood indicates if it were remotely possible or if it were at all possible, assuming that. The conclusion is into the which they were minded to thrust in the ship. That is into which, meaning into the bay with the beach, they decided or resolved to run the ship ashore. Remember, it's a storm. Remember, it's a sailing vessel. Remember, they didn't have the best control over this. Okay? Just remember that. They cut loose the anchors, freed the rudders, lifted the mainsail, and headed toward shore. And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves, notice themselves is in italics, it means it's supplied by the translators, unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoised up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore. And continues the narrative, when they had taken up the anchors is used in conjunction with committed indicating time. And its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of committed. And it's understood in the sense of after they took up the anchors. Having taken up the anchors means removed or took away the anchors. It is used here in the sense of cut off or perhaps cast off the anchors. Rather than suggesting that they hoisted the anchors onto the ship, it suggests that they cast off or slipped the anchors and let them go. They let go the ropes that held the anchors and thus abandoned them. Inasmuch as it was clear that the ship was going to be wrecked, they would no longer be needing the anchors. And as translated, they committed themselves unto the sea, suggests that they entrusted the ship and those on board it to the sea. But as I've said, themselves, which is in italics, which means it's supplied by the translators and is not part of the Greek text, has been supplied by the translators as indicated by the italics, and it is better, in my opinion, understood as them, referring to the anchors, rather to themselves as people. They committed the anchors to the sea and left them behind. I think that's the best way to understand it. A word appears in the Greek text which was not translated into the English, it means together with or and or while at the same time, and connects what the sailors did in the first part of this verse with what follows in the second half of this verse. Loosed the rudder. Those are D's. They're not B's, okay? They're not rubber bands. They're rudder bands. And hoised up the mainsail to the wind. It's a translation of two phrases used in conjunction with made, indicating facts in addition to made or time. And the tense of each action indicates action occurring before the action of made. Loosed the rudder bands. If you're dyslexic, you may think those are the kind of things that you would use in an office to hold some things together, you know, like two or three pens in the same place. Rudder bands, they means they loosened or fastened the ropes or bands that tied the rudders. The rudders is what you would use to steer the ship. The rudders were tied up while the ship was at anchor. Now the rudders were lowered. They were tied up, but not just bound, but tied up out of the water so that they might now be used to steer the ship. And they hoisted up the mainsail to the wind, means they lifted up or raised or hoisted the mainsail or the foresail to the wind. Both phrases have been translated as indicating facts in addition to made, but if showing time, they're understood in the sense of after they unfastened the ropes that tied the rudders and hoisted the mainsail or foresail to the wind. Of course, to the wind is the thing which was blowing, and what was blowing was the wind. And made toward shore is now they're heading for the beach. It's going to get exciting. Made is used as a nautical technical term, and it means they were holding course toward the shore. They ran the ship aground. And the back of the ship was broken by the waves crashing against it. The waves were still pretty high, obviously. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground. Remember, they could not really control it very well. And the fore part, that's the front, stuck fast and remained unmovable. But the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves and transitions to what happened next in the sense of then or now. Falling into a place where two seas met. It's used in conjunction with ran aground, indicating a fact in addition to ran aground or time. And its tense indicates that its action occurred at the same time as the action of ran aground. But if showing effect in addition to ran aground, it's understood in the sense of they struck a place where two seas met, which means that they struck a point of land jutting out with water on both sides. So instead of getting into this indentation on the beach, this bay, they got a point of land and they stuck, and the water is on both sides of them now. It is apparently not where they had hoped to run the ship aground, where the sea indented the shoreline and where there was a beach. But remember something, God is in control. In accordance with his will, God directed otherwise. Some of the best plans you thought you had, God has had a different idea and changed things for you. Okay? When Helene came through, you might have had some plans. They all got changed, didn't they? Very quickly. God, for whatever reason, had a different plan from their plan. And you know what? They really had no choice in the matter. Besides, though you may not understand exactly why, God's plan was undoubtedly better than their plan. They ran the ship aground, indicates what they intended to do, and continues The forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable. Means that the prow or bow, the front part of the ship, stuck fast or jammed fast and remained immovable. Stuck fast is used in conjunction with remained, indicating a fact in addition to remained, or time, or cause. Its action occurred before the action of remained, and it's been translated as indicating a fact in addition to remained. But if showing time, it's understood in the sense of after it stuck or jammed fast. But if showing cause, it's understood in the sense of because it stuck or jammed fast. But talks about the back end of the ship instead of the front end. The hinder part is the stern. The back end of the ship, it was broken with the violence of the waves. So you had some pretty high waves. It was being destroyed or began being destroyed or broken up by the force or by the violence of the waves. The soldier's advice was to kill the prisoner so that none would escape. That's the soldier's counsel. Was to kill the prisoners lest any of them should swim out and escape. And transitions to the next thought. The soldier's counsel, that's the advice of the soldiers, kill the prisoners. It's been placed in a position of emphasis in the Greek text. The advice of the soldiers was the prisoners to kill. The fact that prisoners is plural is a reminder that Paul was not the only prisoner on board the ship. How many other prisoners were on board is unknown. Killing the prisoners would include Paul, but this would not happen because Paul had been assured by God that he would be testifying about him in Rome. It also wouldn't happen because all the rest of the people were going to be delivered. Lest any of them suggest so that none of them swim out, means swim away. Now, where are you going to swim away from a small island? You can only swim so far, and they wouldn't have survived anyway, but anyway, swim away, and it's used in conjunction, should swim away. Is it a fact in addition? Is it showing time? Is it showing condition? If it's showing means, as your Greek scholar, you're going to have to decide which one is best understood in the context, and frankly, since they did it in this way, we believe God directed what they did, but it could have been done in other ways, but it would mean the same thing. Was it a fact in addition? If showing time is after swimming away? If showing condition, if they swim away? If showing means, by swimming away? You understand, if they swam away, they would hopefully escape, but where are they going to go? Out in the middle of nowhere, in the Adriatic Sea, in the middle of a storm. Should escape is might escape. These soldiers decided not to take any chances that a prisoner might escape. You see, here's the problem. If the prisoners escaped, the soldiers' lives would be forfeited. All right, we've seen that before in the Roman era. The centurion ordered the soldiers not to kill the prisoners and everyone to head for shore. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. I wonder how many of those people could swim. Well, I have no way of knowing. Some of them could, obviously. But transitions to the centurion's decision. Remember, he's in control, in contrast to the soldier's advice. The centurion kept them from their purpose. The centurion hindered or prevented or kept them from their intention. Willing to save Paul is used in conjunction with kept, indicating cause. Its tense indicates that its action was ongoing and occurring at the same time as the action of kept. It's understood in the sense of because he was willing, because he was planning, or because he was intended to save Paul from being killed and commanded. He ordered that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to the land. After jumping into the sea, swim to the land. How far was it? 100 yards? 200 yards? 300 yards? 400 yards? You're getting up to a quarter mile at 400 yards. We don't know. Should first cast themselves into the sea. After jumping into the sea, after jumping overboard, swim to shore, get to land. Everyone escaped safely to the island. If they could not swim, how could they do that? Well, God had to provide a way, and he did. The rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. God broke up the ship and provided the means by which they could float into the shore. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to the land. Those who could not swim got there also. Some on board, some on broken pieces of the ship. But they got safely to land. And it came to pass as it happened, or it took place. And what happened is that they escaped all safe to land. That's what happened. Being in the will of God, as I hope you are, can take someone on some interesting twists and turns in his life. I started out in Illinois. I had no idea I was ever going to live in North Carolina. I had no interest in living in North Carolina. I enjoyed the farming communities in Illinois. But God moved me to North Carolina. I had no idea when I was younger that I was going to end up a Greek professor. What in the world would I want to do with that for? I didn't want to do that. I had no idea that God was going to use me to write some commentaries. I had no idea that God was going to lead me to pastor a church in Shelby and then to end up in my son's church in Morganton for a while and then to go to Utah. I had no interest in going to Utah when I was younger. Why would I want to live out there? And then I got there. It was quite a difference of opinion. And I never thought I'd pastor in Florida. God's taken my life on some interesting twists and turns, and here I am, still here today, old, decrepit, but still here. What twists and turns have you experienced in your life? I'm sure you've had some very interesting things. Being in the will of God can take someone on some interesting twists and turns in his life. Realize, however, that God is in control and knows exactly what he is doing. So always be submissive to God. He will provide the direction you need at the time of his discretion. Why doesn't he tell me this in advance? Because he wants me to trust him, I guess. Why doesn't he tell you these things in advance? In accordance with his will. Just trust him. Let him direct you. Let's pray. Our Father, thank you for the privilege of studying this portion of thy word. Help us to understand it and to apply its principles to our hearts and minds in Jesus' name. Amen.